This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is continuing his push for more affordable housing in the city. Today, the mayor announced that more than $26 million will be used to create and preserve affordable housing.
It's one unit at a time. And we want to build more than one unit at a time, but sometimes it's one unit at a time. For whatever reason, whether it's getting the right partners at the table, finding the right funding sources at the table, making sure the community's okay with the projects. These are all challenges that we have every single day, and this is an exciting announcement today.
We're going to talk more about the mayor's announcement in a moment. First, we want to look at some of the challenges to the current affordable housing system in Boston. Take the story of Toni Lopes. She was on her way to Tufts Medical Center in 2015 when something caught her eye. It was a line of people that went on for blocks.
On Washington Street, down Oak Street, down Harrison Ave. I'm like looking, I'm saying, why are all these people here?
Well, the line was for a housing lottery. A new building in Chinatown had 95 apartments for low-income residents, and a Chinese English newspaper reported that more than 4,000 people applied. After seeing the line, Lopes decided to apply. She didn't win, but she is inching up on a wait list.
I got a letter back from them in November of 2017 and saying that I was 53 on the list. I have not received anything since then.
For now, Lopes is living with her brother in the South End. She's retired and living on a fixed income and says she can't afford a place of her own in the neighborhood unless she wins the housing lottery. In the second in our series about affordable housing, WBUR's Kainat Khan looks at how the program for building these affordable units leaves some people behind. She picks up the story with the winner of another housing lottery.
Kristen McCart has won the housing lottery twice.
Which to me was insane because I've never won anything more than a $5 scratch ticket.
The first got her a small studio in the Seaport. The second got her where she is now, a tidy studio apartment in South Boston. She's decorated it with objects that tell the story of her family's roots in the neighborhood.
I have, you know, things from my grandmother.
She points to two porcelain clown dolls.
Even though they're kind of a little scary.
The dolls are sitting on bull horns that belong to her father.
My father's father was in the war and brought them back for him.
Her grandparents bought a house in South Boston in the 1940s for $8,000. That's where she grew up, with her grandparents in the upstairs unit. Her mom and sister still live there. McCart wanted to stay in the neighborhood, but even with a professional job, she couldn't afford a place of her own.
There was nothing below, I want to say, $2,000 a month. I would be eating, you know, Cheez-Its.
Now, McCart pays just under $1,100 for her studio. The market rent for a studio in her building is $2,400. So where do these lottery units come from? They're built through a city policy that requires most new residential developments to contribute affordable housing. There are tiers of affordability, and that affects where the lottery units get placed. Moderate-income lottery units like McCart's are integrated into the new apartment building. Low-income lottery units like the one Lopes is waitlisted for are often in their own building nearby, or built elsewhere in the city. So if a developer builds in Chinatown, the low-income units it's contributing aren't necessarily going to be in Chinatown. Federal and state funding exists to build low-income housing, yet not for middle-income households.
The traditional funding sources are all focused on lower-income households, and yet there are moderate to middle-income households that are being priced out of the city.
Tim Davis is the Boston Planning and Development Agency's housing policy manager. He says the city's policy was designed to meet the gap in middle-income housing. As of 2017, almost 90% of affordable rental units developers build as a result of the city policy are geared toward moderate-income households. But housing advocates argue the policy still leaves many behind.
The, quote, affordable units are not so affordable to actual Boston residents.
Kathy Brown is with the Boston Tenant Coalition. Most affordable units integrated into market-rate developments are for incomes around $75,000 to $100,000 for a household of four. But according to Brown, Boston's median income for a four-person household is just under $60,000. Brown argues that Boston's housing policy doesn't address the needs of residents most at risk of displacement or eviction.
People in Boston, you know, on fixed incomes or just, you know, working class, have much more limited options.
Almost 47,000 low-income units exist in the city. But as Lopes' experience shows, demand far outstrips supply. many low-income renters are left to the private market. The issue is that there are vanishingly few rental units on the private market affordable to low-income households, meaning, by the city's definition, where households aren't spending more than a third of their income on rent. The city estimates around 34,000 low-income households spend half of their income on rent. These households experience a high risk of housing instability. It's unlikely they could withstand a rent increase or an unplanned expense, and the city expects the proportion of low-income residents to grow.
We think it's important to lower the income targets for this affordable housing program. The need is at the lowest incomes, you know, the waiting lists or how many people apply for affordable units. It's thousands of people, so the need is so much greater on the lower end.
The city is open to the critiques that Boston Tenant Coalition and other advocates have raised about the policy. Tim Davis says the BPDA is considering a number of changes to leverage even more from developers. Right now, only buildings with more than 10 units that require a zoning variance fall under the policy. But BPDA wants to include more projects, whether or not they need a zoning variance.
And we think it's important that every project tries to do something for affordable housing in the city.
Only 13% of the units in a building need to be affordable. In a 10-unit building, that's one unit. BPDA is looking into possibly increasing the percentage. And finally, BPDA is evaluating how to target a larger range of incomes. Why can't the city just simply tell developers it wants a larger affordability percentage and lower income limits? It's a question of feasibility.
If you can't earn more income than your operating expenses, then you have to put away your toys and go home.
Peter Roth is the founder of New Atlantic Development, a company which builds affordable and mixed-income buildings. The addition of affordable units means that developers will lose money on them. But they can't lose too much money. Otherwise, the building just won't get built.
You need to make sure that your mix of units, market rate, and affordable will achieve a degree of profitability.
So in exchange for building units at a loss, that is the affordable units, the city cuts the developer a deal, zoning relief. Most of Boston's zoning is for short buildings with a small footprint. Zoning relief lets the developer build a larger building with more units. The additional market units make up for the lost profit of affordable units. Roth likes the city's policy because it's structured as an incentive for developers while extracting a public benefit from them. However, he warns,
it will lose its success if it becomes more like a tax and not an incentive program.
Can you tell me about this project you're working on? I see a bunch of pink ribbons.
That's tulle to make a tutu for my granddaughter for her birthday party. Her theme is Barbie dolls.
Tony Lopes grew up in the South End, in the former Cathedral Public Housing Development. She raised her daughter in the Via Victoria Apartments, a development for low-income households. Her monthly rent for a two-bedroom apartment was under $1,000 for 20 years. It allowed her to save for her own home outside Boston. But during a severe illness, she lost her job and couldn't keep up with the mortgage payments.
I had to come back to the city. At that point, I didn't have no other option. Either that or I would have probably been homeless.
Lopes is one of the many low-income households in the city, waiting for a unit she can afford in the neighborhood she wants to live in near her grandkids. She can manage that now, living with her brother, but she longs for a place of her own.
I would like open space, a large room. I'm an artist. I work with acrylic paints, oil paints. I work with floral arrangements. I sew. All of this stuff takes up room.
There is another option for developers. If they don't want to set aside affordable units in their building, they can pay into a city fund for low-income housing. Since 2000, developers have contributed over $137 million to this fund, and it's been used to build more than 1,000 units of low-income housing. Most of the new low-income units are concentrated in Roxbury and Dorchester. The city says many in these communities fear displacement and want more low-income housing built there, which raises a question. What choice do low-income Bostonians have about where they can live?
That's WBUR's Kainat Khan. For more now on what Boston is doing about affordable housing and today's announcement from Mayor Walsh, we turn to Sheila Dillon. She's Chief of Housing and Director of Neighborhood Development for Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit more about this announcement from Mayor Walsh today that there's $26 million from various sources for affordable housing.
That's right. We put out $26 million today. Most of that is to support new affordable housing projects in many neighborhoods throughout the city. And there was another $5 million that we put forward for our acquisition opportunity program, where nonprofits have resources to go out and buy tenanted buildings to make sure that those tenants are safe once their buildings go up for sale. So it was a good day. A lot of money was given out, and hopefully these projects will start soon.
So what are you thinking in terms of number of units with that money?
Sure. So there was we put about $17, $18 million out for the creation of 500 units. 300 of those are deeply affordable.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking a couple hundred units there?
300. Yeah. And then the $5 million in AOP will you know, allow us to buy several hundred others when apartment buildings go up for sale.
You know, we started this with the story of Toni Lopes. She applied for a housing lottery in Chinatown. And a Chinese American newspaper said that there were 4,000 people applying for 95 spots, and she's been on the wait list since 2015. I'm just wondering, what do you do about that kind of demand and you know, what the city is doing to try to meet that demand?
Right. So there is a lot of demand. You know, the city has about 54,000 units of affordable housing. We have a very high percentage in comparison to other cities, but we know that that's not enough, and we're trying very hard to increase the amount of affordable housing. So we're putting out land, we're putting out real estate for development for affordable housing, we're incentivizing developers with funding, we are leveraging money from the state and the federal government. I mean, we're working 24/7 trying to increase the supply of affordable housing. At the same time, you have to be looking always in the rearview mirror saying, we've got to maintain that 54,000 units to make sure they don't become obsolete. So we're also working very hard to preserve the affordable units that we have. But the lotteries, they're large. And a lot of the folks, although we prioritize residents from Boston, a lot of the people entering the lotteries are from outside Boston. You know, cities and towns aren't creating any affordable housing at all.
Hmm. Can you define affordability, or how the city defines it when it's looking at creating affordable housing?
Sure. So most of the housing, like today, for example, most of the housing that we're funding today is for low income families. And, you know, a family of three would have to make less than $55,000. A family of four would have to make less than $62,000. But probably more are closer to $50,000. So that's the projects that we funded today. We're sort of in that range. If you're an individual, you know, you're making less than $35,000, and the rents are sized accordingly.
We heard in Kainat's piece today about inclusionary development and some of the income guidelines there, and that was much higher. It was a family of four having between $75,000 and $129,000 a year to qualify for some of the affordable housing. There's also affordable housing on that end as well.
Right. We are the IDP program does cap rents at 70% of median, which is higher. But, you know, one way to look at this is that those units don't cost the city any resources, right? We're not funding, we're not giving developers of market rate housing any money to create those affordable units. They're creating them on their own. They're deed restricted, the right people get into them, and they are serving a piece of the population that we don't have to spend money on, quite frankly. We can take our resources from the federal government or the resources that we are growing internally and make those available to increase the supply of affordable housing for much lower income households. We need everything. We need our public housing to serve the poorest among us. We need to fund new affordable housing units where families are making, you know, 40, 50, 60,000. And we need the IDP units to serve families and households that are making, you know, 60, 70, 80,000. We really do need a range of incomes if we want a healthy city.
Hmm. How would you describe how the hot housing market has affected all of this? We looked up some statistics for our show this week on housing, and we found that Boston has what's considered the fourth highest rents in the country, the average right now about $2,400 a month. What does that do to change your fight at all for more affordable housing?
Sure. So, I mean, we are, you know, we are seeing rents stabilized, but they are still high, and they are much higher than a lot of our population can afford. So we are motivated to increase the supply, certainly. We're also motivated to continue to extract resources from our market rate developers. They do have to provide money or affordable units if they want to build new market rate housing in Boston. We are hopeful that increased supply will continue to stabilize the rents, although even if the rents are stabilized, like I said, those rents are going to be out of reach for many. That's why we have to continue to create affordable housing. That's why Mayor Walsh is putting a lot of additional resources to that end.
And there are also other sort of policy proposals that the city is looking at as well. Can you explain a little bit about what's happening in terms of economic development and housing stability plans, just briefly, from the mayor?
Sure. Well, we recognize that not everybody is going to have an affordable unit immediately, right? There isn't mm-hmm. enough, and we recognize that. So we did file with our economic development cabinet new legislation, this new legislative term. We filed a right to counsel so that anyone who is facing an eviction or needs to have mediation with their landlords can have a right to legal counsel. We also filed a bill that would allow residents that are living in an apartment building, if their owner is going to sell that building, that they would have a right of first refusal, or they could assign that right to another developer, probably a nonprofit developer. Mm-hmm. So that, because sometimes we see pain if a new buyer is coming along, they buy a building, they want to increase the rents, they want to empty out the building to do extensive renovations, et cetera. So this would give tenants living in a building some protections and a different alternative. And we filed Just Cause for Seniors. Right now we have too many cases. We're hearing from too many seniors that are saying that they're being given rent increases. They're on fixed income. So we're saying, one, you have to have a good reason if you're going to evict a senior. And two, you can only raise their rents by 5% per year. So we're really focusing on protecting our tenants until we can build enough affordable housing.
You know, we spoke about this plan of the mayor's, the rent cap for elderly residents, on our show yesterday. And we talked with Douglas Quattrocci, who's executive director of Mass Landlords. And he said, you know, that cap sounds a lot like rent control. And he thinks that there are other solutions. I want to play a little piece of tape from our show yesterday. Let's listen.
Instead of capping rent increases to 5% a year, which is cold comfort for someone who's, you know, Social Security doesn't increase that much. Mm. Why not extend the mass rental voucher program to people 75 and older in the form of a guarantee, where if they do fall on hard times, we've got money available to pay the rent and keep them stably housed.
Sheila Dillon, what would you say to that suggestion?
Well, if he's suggesting that the state increase the MRVP program, for one, which is we're also asking them to look at the MRVP program and see if there's additional resources for vouchers. And then I think he's suggesting that in case an elder or anyone gets behind in their rent or comes upon hard times and gets behind, that there's resources available to catch them up. Those programs exist. And they're well-funded. The state is funded, putting more money into the RAF program. We have our own program where we help with rent arrearages. So all of those remedies are in place, but we still are seeing a lot of elders not treated the way they should. and we want to take additional action.
Hmm. And do you think, though, that there is going to have to be not just policy proposals on the part of the city, but also some movement from property owners, landlords, developers, real estate folks? Are they going to have to be brought to the table more to try to find a more comprehensive solution and perhaps even a regional one?
Well, everything we do, every policy we put out and every change to an extraction, we talk to the advocates and we do talk to the real estate community. The real estate community is important to us and we want to make sure that our policies are fair and that they're not going to cripple real estate development in the city. We are, you know, the mayor chairs with Mayor Curtatone from Somerville, a regional housing task force that has just put forth a goal to build 185,000 units in the area. And so that is start. We need supply. We need multifamily housing outside of Boston. So that's a very, very good start. And MAPC has been sort of leading that work. We do need like transportation and healthcare and food securities. We need regional solutions. So we're very anxious to see that 185,000 units start, and we're also very interested in other cities and towns stepping up and building more affordable housing.
Sheila Dillon, Chief of Housing and Director of Neighborhood Development for the City of Boston, thanks so much for being with us.
All right, my pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.